even the most level-headed of us might find ourselves looking at an old knick-knack or a piece of art that's been in the family forever and think, oh, yeah, I wonder what that's worth. Maybe it's a treasure and I just don't know it. Hi, Larry Mueller here. There are probably a lot more items in your attic whose value is pretty much sentimental, but once in a while, might be a treasure hidden in there as well. And we're lucky to have Shirley Bauman with us today. She's a certified personal property appraiser. She's a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, and she owns Bauman Auction Services. And Shirley, always great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's just a pleasure to be here. As always, I love talking with your listeners.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And you just got back from the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association annual conference. What goes on at an auctioneer's conference?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of bid calling and fast talking going on.
I bet.
But in addition to that, we have a lot of learning opportunities. And one of the things we learned about this time is benefit auctioneering.
Benefit auctioneering.
Yes, that's where we see, and maybe many listeners have attended, those large auctions, where maybe 300, 400, 500 people attend, and there might be a big gala dinner, and then we auction off a group of items to be their annual fundraiser or a fundraiser for a particular purpose. For example, I did worked with the folks a while ago on a one-time gala benefit fundraiser when they were building the Goodman Community Center.
Ah.
And that night we raised over $115,000 for the
wow.
center.
Wow.
And so we had Christy King there, who's the past president of the National Auctioneers Association, and she helped us learn a little bit more about how we can make sure we don't leave money in the room when mm-hmm. it's the big fundraiser, and that's our purpose, is to get as much as we can for the cause, whether it might be a children's hospital, a community center, or whatever other nonprofit it happens to be that people want to raise money for. And it's one of the largest growing segments of the auction industry right now.
Very interesting. So people, I assume it's set up so that people are donating items.
Yes, the donations are received from the community, and it's kind of an art as to what are the best items to go after. So the organization needs to think, well, what would my people, the people who come to my auction, what would they really want to bid on? For example, when we did an auction for a Catholic high school, and so we got donations and put together the college package with a laptop computer and a microwave and refrigerator and some bedding and, $100 prepaid Visa card for the student going off to college. Whereas if you'd have that maybe at Children's Hospital, that wouldn't be a big item for people to bid on.
Very, very interesting.
So you kind of look at, and then you look at, well, who do we know that could help us get these items? And, what about those trips that people have at the big auctions? How can we get those in our auction? Because they bring some money, And so it's an art as to know what to get, what order to put them in when the bidding is up.
Oh, yeah. I suppose there's a trick to that, too.
Yes. And I'd like to remind everybody that it's the auctioneer and, of course, the volunteers and people involved in the organization. But the auctioneer is the person who has your interest in raising as much money as possible as their primary goal.
Yeah. That sounds great. Very interesting. And that's really gained popularity.
It is. As a matter of fact, the National Auctioneers Association now has a course of study called Benefit Auctioneering Specialist. And I have taken that at several days. And you have to, go through all kinds of exercises and things to learn how to do that and to help organizations do that best. And the thing is, the auctioneers I know of who really specialize in this really want to help these groups raise money because it's so important to their success.
Yeah, man, it's we got to make you feel good when you help a deserving group make the money to be able to operate.
Absolutely, it does.
Lee in Cudahy has a question for you, Shirley. So let's go there. Lee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a painting of a girl. It's by Nick Lentz, NICLENZ. And it's a 10 by 14 about, and she's leaning over a table with, fruit on the table.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And beneath her feet, it's like a clown, like he's been poisoned or something.
Oh, my.
And I was wondering what it's worth.
Is this a print?
It's a painting.
It is a painting.
An oil painting on canvas?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Nick Lentz is a Wisconsin artist, was a Wisconsin artist, and his son is also an artist now. He was from the Milwaukee area, actually, I guess, grew up around Port Washington. He is a listed artist, not real well-known, not your everyday household name, but certainly one of the people in Wisconsin that we like to, claim as our own artist. And values, it's kind of hard to know exactly where it is today, but the last time I saw about it, I guess 10 by 12, 14, from Lens, I saw the prices at about the $250, $300 value. So not a real high value, but in the local market, they certainly might be able to go a lot higher if, people know Mr. Lenz or knew his family around the Milwaukee, Port Washington area. If it went up for auction, for example, it might go a lot higher than that.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too. Maybe you have something special. You wonder what it might be worth, or maybe you've gotten something appraised in the past and wonder about it. You buy things as investments. That's another part. I know some people do that. A lot of people do that. They have collections. Sometimes they work out, and sometimes they don't. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's go to Ellen next in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Ellen. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. My mother had some cousins who were missionaries in China several generations starting around 1900, and I have inherited some objects that she was given by them as gifts. And I'm wondering if you could recommend somewhere I could take them to have someone tell me more about them. I get to Madison every now and then, and I'm equal distance to the Twin Cities.
Sure. First, let me mention something about the art and antiques from China. That market is hot right now. The Chinese are trying to buy back their treasures. And they will send people here to the Twin Cities, to Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago, every summer, just hunting for Chinese treasures that have come out of their country. And so that market is very strong. So if there are things that anyone's wishing to sell at this point, it's a strong market. Now, you said these came from your family, and that might not be your issue. The one place you can go to find out information about them in terms of what do you have, what value maybe what time period they're from. You could do that possibly at one of the museums that has an Asian arts section, making an appointment there and talking to the curators. And that's how you get that information. But a museum staff will not discuss value with you because that's right. Actually a conflict of interest for them because they might want to buy items, your item, and then telling you the value and buying it, you can see where a potential conflict of interest could arise. So for that, you would actually need an appraiser. Now, I myself am not a specialist in the Asian arts, but if I do, of course, know how to research some things, but if I come across things that I just am not familiar enough with, I have colleagues in my professional organization who I can consult with. As a matter of fact, I had one recently where we had some Chinese watercolors, and I just didn't really know. They looked pretty good to me, but I couldn't read the signatures because I don't read the language. And I contacted a colleague of mine who has been the Asian arts curator at the Royal Museum in Toronto, up in Canada.
Oh.
And she took a look at them and got back to me all excited. She said, "This one is by the most famous and beloved Chinese artist ever."
Oh, and, my goodness.
She showed me a recent auction sale where one of his works that was about the size of the one this gentleman had, who I was appraising it for, that went for $179,000.
Oh.
Well, he had a stack of 13 of them in the basement. Oh. And so we did have one of those roadshow moments when I told him.
Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, we couldn't authenticate them because I couldn't authenticate them because I'm not an expert. And she couldn't do that over email. So our solution was there was to go down to Chicago with him to Sotheby's and get the authentication to make sure. And then we, you know, talked with them, of course, again about value. But so sometimes it takes a little bit of looking around before you really get the answer.
There you go.
Would you have a short list of museums that have Asian art sections, either in the Twin Cities or would Milwaukee?
I don't know off the top of my head. If you have access to the internet, I'm sure their websites will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have, boy, that guy must have been happy.
Yes, he was. And he said, my sister in Texas has more.
Oh, my word. Drew in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Drew.
Howdy, howdy. My grandpa used to be the, I guess he was like the janitor caretaker of the YMCA in the 30s in Duluth.
Uh-huh.
And that's when they used to have people stay in there. It was like a hotel.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there was this world explorer guy that used to live there when he wasn't exploring. And he got to know my grandpa, and he gave him two tusks. One is Aleutian Islands. It's two tusks joined together with pins. And it's the Aleutian Islands carved on one, and one is just a walrus tusk.
Hmm.
And they're from the 1930s.
Or probably before, I don't know, but that's when he worked there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, at least the 30s.
Well, there are laws nowadays about selling ivory, and it boils down to wanting to protect the animals.
Yeah. Sure.
And what you need, and I have to look up the date every time. I can't remember that. There's too many numbers in my head, I guess. But it's certainly before the 1930s that if it's before a certain date, you can sell ivory. And if it's after that date, you cannot. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you have to prove that it's before that. So you would have to have paperwork dating them.
Oh, yeah, it'd be hard to
It would be hard to do
prove.
That.
Uh-huh.
So as of because of that reason, the ivory market is very interesting and complicated sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because if you've got new ivory and you it came to you however it did.
Yeah.
You know, the ivory police probably aren't going to break into your home or anything, but if they came on the market publicly, that would be a problem.
Okay,
and
so
at that point, we say it really has only its intrinsic value because you can't resell it.
Oh, okay. So there's no collectible value. All right. Well,
there is to you and privately, but on the...
On the market, no.
We would say not really.
All right.
If they're not old enough and you can't prove it.
Yeah, there you go. Although if there was something actually inscribed into the tusk that had a date on it.
A date on it, a person's name that we knew, you know, the artist whom we could look up records and find out that he passed away prior to this date. And then we might even, depending on what you have, need to carbon date it.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. And there are some, you know, antiquities that we can look at when we, you know, know that they're from that period. But you really need an ivory specialist to get to that point.
Thanks again, Drew, for calling. Randy in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, thank you. Good morning. What a great show. Still good morning. My question is, my son has been urging me to buy silver. He thinks it's a good investment right now. He thinks it's undervalued. And I want to get your opinion on that.
Boy, I wish I had the crystal ball. It is high right
now. Is silver undervalued right now?
I don't know. I honestly don't know that. Silver is at a high price. Silver and gold, precious metals, are all high right now. Whether that's going to last, I don't know. Whether it's going to go up or down, I really don't know. And I guess that's why it's part of the world of investing in terms of, you know, any other investments we make, I don't know. I like silver and gold jewelry, so I pick it up and think, hold its value, please, you know. So I really can't answer that question. And maybe you want to talk to some coin dealers, silver and precious metal dealers, and get their opinion.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I can't help you more with that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. We have Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois, next with a question. Hi, Nelson. Are you there? Oh, will we lose him? Let's try Donna in Milwaukee. Hi, Donna. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. I have a small, looks like oil painting on a board.
Okay.
Mounted in a gold frame. And it looks like the signature is a Schoenfelder. And it's a pastoral painting. Trees on either side of the painting and a stream with some rocks. And I've had it appraised once a number of years ago and for like $75 to $125.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if, but the person wasn't familiar with the name of the artist.
Well, that is exactly the thing that we do need to look for when we're researching art, is that artist and their popularity and their current popularity, because, of course, that market goes up and down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a particular artist is hot and sometimes not so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that name off the top of my head.
Okay.
And that's what we need to do. You could be looking on the Internet, doing some searching. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, I was working with a family not long ago, and, boy, we just couldn't make out the signature. And it happens sometimes, oh, maybe they're doing it with the paintbrush, or in such a hurry you can't read their signatures. And mm-hmm. That always makes it very hard for us, unless they mm-hmm. have a very distinctive style.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're describing with pastoral and such doesn't sound particularly distinctive. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of landscape art, so I really can't give you a value on the air.
No.
It's particularly fetching because it's so finely done.
Yeah.
You know, the little twigs and everything is just, you know, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds very nice, but see if you can do some searching on that artist's name and put that name in with art or artist or mm-hmm. painter or mm-hmm. that kind of thing and see if you can
see what comes up.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Ellie wondered in an email where she could go to get an evaluation on World War I German war bonds issued by the city of Leipzig?
Leipzig, Germany. Sure. Well, most of your appraisers or auctioneers who have some appraisal background should be able to help you with that. That isn't a real rare item. So I think you should be able to find that. You also could find something, I believe, on the Internet looking at other auction results. Again, I'm not sure if that city makes a big difference in the value, so I'm not going to give you a number here, but that's where I would go. The Internet, look those up. Look up with the city of what is it, Leipzig. And, again, maybe a local auctioneer who has appraisal, who's been around a long time, has some appraisal background, may have actually sold those over the years because those things do come up.
An email from Pete in La Crosse, who has several Hummel figurines, some dating back to the early 1900s, having trouble finding good sources of information to fully identify the year and value. The online sources I have are confusing and do not always easily go back to the 20s or 30s.
Well, one thing about the Hummel figurines is they have gone down in value. And there's a couple reasons for that, unfortunately, I have to tell you that. One is that they've become so readily available on the Internet, and because the Japanese have learned how to reproduce them pretty well. It's hard to see the difference. So they do go down. Now, you do have the older ones, and that's they do hold value better than the newer ones. There are some very good books. I wish I could remember Lucky's book on Hummel. That's the Lucky is the author. That mm-hmm. one is probably a 2-3 inch thick, large bound volume on a Hummel's. And they will help you a lot with identification. But those books right now aren't going to help you a lot with value, because the value has changed so dramatically fairly recently. I mean, we've had, the small 3-4 inch Hummels I've seen for sale at garage sales 3 for $10.
Wow.
And you used to buy them for $75 to $100 a piece.
Wow.
Now, the very large ones do hold more value yet, because they're harder to come by. And I think yours with the early 1900s might hold some value. Again, the marks underneath those Hummels make a difference, as you know, and some people recognize and some don't. They have what they call the full B mark, with a little B and a V, and some are stylized Bs, and you've got to check those marks too. And there should be an impressed number in the bottom. If you can see that in a fine light, maybe take a flashlight, bright light, and kind of put it on the bottom mm-hmm. of it. You might be able to see that impressed number and look it up by the number.
Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. Our guest, she owns Bauman Auction Services. Our guest here for the next hour or so on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. She's taking your phone call when you call in and talk about the world of appraisals, what's hot, maybe what's not in that world. Shirley Bauman, our guest, and great to have her with us as well. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Maybe you've got a photo of what you're interested in or what you want Shirley to take a look at. And you could throw that up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Please feel free to do that. Lisa in Appleton up next with a question. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Hi. I have a Panama Pacific Expo 1915 Hershey grandfather clock that won grand prize. And I've tried to find research on it to figure out its value. Any ideas?
Sounds like a nice item. Now, those expos, like the one you mentioned, Panama Pacific, are what's commonly referred to as the World's Fair.
Yeah.
Now, and so there is a category of collecting just under World's Fairs.
Okay.
And I would start with World's Fair and then Panama Pacific, and you'll get to things from that era, and then go into the clock, where a lot of people might look at the clock first.
Oh, better to go the other way around.
Better to go
okay.
the other way. Start with the World's Fair collectibles and then try to narrow it down. Grandfather clock, you said by who?
Hershey.
Hershey, okay. Well, the collectibles on their own do have some value just because it was from the expo. You said this one won the blue ribbon, which
yes.
is, we'll bring it up even a little bit more. And again, I don't see the clock. I can't really give you a number. But look at it through World's Fair collectibles. I've seen some of the World's Fair collectibles, the Expo collectibles, bringing very good money.
Okay.
It's one of the earlier ones. Of course, we see in Wisconsin, we see a lot of things from the Chicago expos.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I'd go with it. Look for the World's Fair collectibles and follow it that way. I think you have some, I'm sure you have some good value with that piece.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa, for calling. And Bill in Wausau. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. You know, I'm kind of a conservative old German, but some years ago, in a moment of temporary insanity, I bought 2 Vander cookie jars. One is the Jackie Gleason bus, and the other one is the I Love Lucy convertible thing. And I understand the bottom has fell out of cookie jars, but am I better off just selling them on eBay or trying to consign them to an auction someplace or eating cookies out of them?
Well, you are right. The bottom has kind of fallen out of those. There was a time when we'd see around here cookie jars made by the Shawnee Company, which is a, you know, American company, going for $600, $700, $750, and now they might go for $100. I keep telling people it's a market. Things go up and down. It's just like anything else. Otherwise, we'd always buy things and get rich. So it it goes up and down. I think your last choice is probably good right now in terms of using them for your cookies.
Okay.
Because the market may go up again.
Okay.
And you might, if you're not in a hurry or anything like that, you might just enjoy them for a while and see if the market doesn't pick up.
Yeah, they're in their original box up on the shelf and wrapped in plastic, so I'll keep them there. When I bought them, one of my sons says, "Who are you and what have you done with my real father?"
And, a lot of younger people will say now, who's Jackie Gleason? As they do with other of the, Shirley Temple and some of the other collectibles, that character collectibles that came up.
Yeah. Well, thank God for reruns, huh?
Yeah. That's right.
That's right. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it very much. All right. Neil in Sussex emailed, has received his grandmother's stamp collection from 1900 to 1950, emphasis on European stamps. Many are from countries that no longer exist. How do you get that collection appraised?
Well, coins and stamps are very specialized areas. And stamp collecting was a popular hobby, kind of went out of favor a bit, and has come back a little bit now. But it's something, for example, that I don't appraise. You need to be really specialized in those. And when I have something, I go to a coin and stamp dealer that I know of, that I trust, that I've developed a relationship with, and consult with that person. And that's what I would suggest that you do, is talk to people around, find a dealer that they trust. Don't necessarily sell them to the dealer. You shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Have the same person appraise and buy your items. So make sure they know right away you're not selling them to them. And then have them give you values, and then you can decide what you want to do with them. Some people, if they couldn't find personal recommendations, will take them to a couple of different dealers, especially if one dealer tells them, this one's very special and valuable, then take just that one or those small handful that might be much more valuable than the rest. But it is a very specialized area.
Okay, let's go to Edith in Waukesha then. Edith, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. We have, for the last 30 years, and I think they are much, much older than that, two Chinese amber dogs. And they are very similar. They look in two different directions. I mean, each of them look in different directions. And they are standing on a very pretty carved, each of them have their own stand, a very dark wood, very heavy wood stand. I would say they are about 6 inches high and probably 4 inches long. They are fairly sizable. When a person looks at them, they look black. But if we hold them up to the light, they have a very deep color of red.
Mm-hmm. Are they ceramic?
No, they are amber.
They are carved out of the stone amber?
Yes.
Okay.
And they are large. So the piece mm-hmm. of amber had to be very large.
You've kind of got me at a loss here because I'm not sure a couple of things. First of all, the quality of the amber. And I'm not a gemologist, so I don't know the gemstones. And that might be one thing you want to look at. And again, the Chinese dogs, are they in the style or are they actually carved in China?
I am almost positive that they were carved in China, as this relative of my husband's has gone around the world several times,
mm-hmm.
and she spoke about having been in China a long, long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. by looking at it, you need to have someone take a look at that. That's something that needs to be seen in person, again, because of the quality of the amber. It's like any stone. We have a variety of qualities. And I'm just not an expert there. And, you again, then to find the carving characteristics of the particular period that they might come from. In some particular period, the dogs might have different characteristics than they would have in later periods. They just did something different, maybe with the eyes or the tail or whatever it is. So that's something that really needs to be looked at in person.
So where would we take it? To Christie's?
You might, or if you're located in the area, you might take it to a museum just to get their thoughts on it. If they have, again, an Asian arts section, they won't give you a value on it, but they might be able to, if you're local there, they might be able to say, yes, go ahead, and or they might say, well, this looks like something that isn't something that you need to invest further into finding out about. It's probably a lower dollar value. So they might be able to, you know, help you know when to stop and when to continue in that. And with Christie's and that, you can take, if you can take good photographs and email them to you, they can go ahead and we'll get back to you on that. They need really good photographs, and you have to have patience because it takes a long time. Just about the time you think you're not going to hear from them, you will.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much, Edith, for that question. Tim sent us a photo on, there's actually quite a few photos now up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show. And so if you're, as you listen in, you might want to go take a look at some of these. This is a tin toy, Tim sent it, and wondering about its value. It's a motorcycle. It looks really in great shape, about 4 inches, 5 inches long.
Yes, it does. And I can't tell from it if it's a battery operated or a key wind up. Or maybe even a friction toy, where you just run it by hand and zoom, yeah. You know, and then it goes. But these tin toys are very collectible.
Yeah, I think it's great.
It looks great. It looks like it might be a friction toy because I don't see a key wind up on it. But even the toys that came back from the World War II period, you know, with soldiers who brought those back, are collectible today. Value-wise, I can only see one side of it, of course, and we can't tell from a photograph if it works, if it's a friction, if it's battery, if it does work. But this is could easily be something that might be in the $100 to maybe $150 if it has a special name on it from its maker that we can't tell who made it, and somebody well-known made it, it might go up from there. But a very nice toy.
And we had a watercolor as well from Tim. This is, let's try and make this bigger, but yeah, we don't have a name with it.
We don't have an artist's name, and that is so important. And I would like to mention that I see a lot of this style of work when I go out to do appraisals.
It's castles where it looks
it's kind of a castle or even a street scene. That's just a little portion of the street. You might look down the street and see a part of a building on each side. And in especially a lot of the European countries, a lot of the street vendors did this kind of work along the way. And that could easily be what this is. But if we could see a signature, and some of them are watercolors, some of them are actually etchings that have been later have had some hand coloring added. So it makes a big difference. But we look at, again, those signatures on there.
Let's turn to John in Madison next. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Sounds like you got a lot of nice pictures. I can't wait to get home and look.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff.
Yeah, we love to collect stuff. My wife has a watercolor from the late 50s. A friend gave it to her. Original frame, and then the last name of the guy is Ackerman, and it's like a farm scene. It's just beautiful. It's pretty good size. It's probably about a 20 by 22 or maybe a 18 by 22. And I was just wondering if she had heard the guy's name at all.
Well, if we could have a first name, that would be very, very helpful. I just, as you were explaining it to me, I just went and looked up on one of the artist databases that I subscribe to, and there's a whole page of Ackermans there. And
I think she did see at one time the exact photo, and the guy was pretty popular. I think they were pretty expensive, but it's from the 50s, so it's like original frame. It's probably worth something, you would think.
Sure. I would think so, too. And if, you know, you've seen it before and it's a nice original watercolor. But that name means so much because, you know, George Van Gogh and Vincent Van Gogh are going to be way different values.
I know.
The right names.
There you go, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Shirley Bellman, our guest today, as we talk with her about what's hot in the world of appraisals here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Antiques and appraisals on our minds today with the registered Wisconsin auctioneer Shirley Bauman, who is owner of Bauman Auction Services. We have a link to her website on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can find it there. You'll also find a number of photos of things that people have wonder about their value. And they're pretty cool stuff up here on the Facebook page for sure. We just talked about a little tin motorcycle. And next, from Sarah, we have a nice photo of a rainbow trout. I believe her, she says, my dad had two of these fish pictures done for him by L.W. Weisgerber, and wondered if you know anything about Weisgerber. In the Milwaukee area, probably the 1950s, and she says they're drawn on what I call crepas.
Crepas, yeah.
Crepas.
It's kind of a, well, oil crayon almost. I don't know Weisgerber very well. I know of the name. He is a Wisconsin artist. And obviously, by looking at that print, it's very well done. He was
it's
not
really
an amateur.
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm not finding him on listings of artists. So I think his, and sometimes, unfortunately, the wildlife artists don't get their due.
Yeah.
Because fine artists kind of don't think of them as artists sometimes. However, this is very well done. This is not an amateur work. I would say you might actually check in with the Museum of Wisconsin Artists in West Bend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He may be very well featured there. And but I would say these are probably on paper and from the 50s, you know. You could be looking at, $300-$500 on that, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they look so well done.
Yeah, they really looks well done. Sharon in Janesville. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. We have a print. It's probably 18 by 24 of the Andersonville Stockade. And underneath the actual print, it has Alex B. Campbell. This was written by him. Private company, A13, Wisconsin, volunteer, prisoner of war, 8 months, 11 days, confined at Calababa, Alabama, Macon, and Andersonville, Georgia, captured August 18th. 1864 and released April 28, 1865. And it has a name on the print of L. Jur-Clapp, K-L-A-P-P, 1903.
Hmm.
Is that inscription handwritten? Or printed?
Underneath what I read to you is all handwritten by Alex. Now, he was my husband's great-grandfather's brother-in-law. He and his father both enlisted at the same time out of Edgerton and went up to Madison and took a train to wherever they went, you know.
He's lucky he survived that. Yes. Andersonville was an awful, awful place.
Oh, and the picture is not pretty. I mean, it's really, you know, emaciated men, and it looks terrible.
So is it a photo or is it a drawing?
No, it's a print, and I assume that this Alger Clapp probably originally painted one. I don't know.
Right.
How do you?
It could be that, yeah, he may be the original artist of it, and then prints were made from that original art. And in my way of thinking, the print itself probably doesn't have as much value as the inscription,
right,
and the personal information that's on it. Civil War collectors absolutely love to know who things belong to and what happened to those people and where they went. And you've got that all on there. And that makes anything where a print like that, you know, if it's an interesting print, even a well-known and in a frame, it may be $100 or $200. With all that information on there, a real Civil War collector might pay, I don't know, I would guess up to $1,000 for something like that to get that information, especially if you also could find a family photo of the soldier and put that with it.
We have one, and we also have a diary from him also.
That all adds up, and keep it as a collection. The temptation might be in the next generation to give one grandson one the diary and one the photo and one the print, but I would highly suggest you keep them all together.
Okay, and we're thinking about donating it to the museum in Fort Atkinson.
For a donation like that, you can take a tax deduction, but you will need an appraisal for that. The IRS requires anything over $500 in that art and antique category to be appraised.
Great.
And you would certainly see that being...
I would see that as being over that amount.
Over that amount, for sure.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And... Jean in La Crosse. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two iron cemetery urns and that were I have used in gardening in the past, and they're not matching. They're different designs. And they originally came from one of our cemeteries here in La Crosse. I know that. I was given them. As a gift from somebody, and they have a seam on them, both on pedestals, and one of them, the taller of the two, has some faded color on bits of it, and I'm wondering, is there a market for that type of thing right now?
Well, yes, there actually is. Garden Antiques is quite a market right now. In Chicago, they even have shows on just gardening antiques.
Wow.
And outdoor antiques, fountains and urns and planters and that kind of thing. So
I
there is definitely a market for them. And the old cast iron, especially with some color like that, I would think would be of interest to those collectors. Are they very large pieces?
The tallest of the two is, I have them in storage right now, but I think that one's probably about 3 feet. And
sure.
It's, by guessing, it's probably about 22 inches in width. And that has more of a round top on it. And then the base comes down. There's a stem, and then it's got a solid foot on it. And there's a faded pink ball on the pedestal, or pardon me, on the stick part going down. And about 22 inches. And then the second one is shorter and not as tall of a pedestal. But it still has a foot, I guess you'd say. And that one's probably, I'm guessing, 18 to 20 inches. So they have some width to them.
And they would definitely be of interest. You know, some years ago when Wisconsin Public Television and radio here has their garden show coming up. And there have actually been some garden antique dealers there in the early years because they were so popular. And you know, when you get to people who love their gardens and gardening, like all those people who come to expos like this, they would definitely be going for something like that, who like antiques and gardening.
That's a good suggestion. Thank you. I'm going to try to make it to that. So, okay.
Yeah.
So check out the expo if I can get down there. And I have checked online, and I just haven't found anything exactly like them. When I've tried to check, you know, places that sell these kind of things. And so I guess I need to keep looking, and but that gives me a couple sources there. So.
And look for gardening antiques.
Thank you. Yeah,
as a
I have.
Category. Okay.
Yeah, okay. But I'll keep looking.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, I had so much fun last summer when we did our garden tour in England.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the old pieces in those gardens, I mean, just made such a difference in the beauty of the place.
Right, right. They can almost be as beautiful as the flowers in them.
Yep, absolutely. Joel in Swamigo, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I inherited from my mother an approximately 4x6 inch, probably in its original frame, onboard oil painting by Etheridge A. Burbank. She acquired it when, my father was a Lutheran minister and did his internship in San Francisco in 1950. Their first child died, and one of the neighbors gave this painting to them as a sympathy gift. On the back of it is about a 2x2 square written apparently in Etheridge Burbank's own hand describing the picture. It's a Navajo village with ladders going up to the upper level, and he signed that, and the signature matches the signature on the front of the oil.
Hmm.
It sounds like you've got a wonderful piece by a well-known artist with provenance, knowing where it came from. That's what provenance is. You have that history on it. And he is selling right now. And that Native American art is pretty popular. I'm seeing some things going, in the size you're talking about, and maybe up to the, 4,000-5,000 dollar range.
Really?
I wouldn't say yours is exactly that, but I have seen some going there. So it's definitely got good value.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I sent some pictures of it to one of the guys who was one of the appraisers on Antique Roadshow, and they said 8 to 12. So you think there's actually some appraisal at this, or some increase in value at this point?
Well, there could be. And, the thing about the Antiques Roadshow is that the appraisers that they have are some of the best of the best. And they come from the big galleries and the biggest auction houses, and they're on maybe the East or West Coast. And the price you could get there compared to what you might get here in Wisconsin is different, because they have the exposure, they have the clientele and all of that. If it's been, since the roadshow was here last, if there's been, there's probably been some change, how much I don't know. But I think you've got a real good piece and it would be worth looking at. And I know he is, currently, I'm seeing some current sales for him. So it would certainly be worth looking into exactly what it is now.
Okay, well, thank you so very much.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Thank you very much for calling. Dana sent us a note on Facebook. Love to ask you about an item from late 1800s to 1900. We don't know how to price it, research it, or sell it. It's a 4-foot by 3-foot wall hanging that has hand-blown bubble glass encasing a wildlife scene with a real stuffed grouse and pheasants. Originally hanging in a New Jersey home, could be from Europe. Man, love to see a photo. I can see a picture of it.
Yes, I would too.
It's hard to know without
4x3-foot wall hanging, blown glass bubble.
Encasing
this.
A wildlife scene. It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, the Victorians were big at putting their animals in taxidermy and even feathers in picture-type settings and to hang on the wall and such. So that sounds like what you have is one of those Victorian animal scapes or animal artwork. And I'd look under that kind of a setting, Victorian taxidermy.
Ah.
And see if you can come up with something that way. And then, you know, you might even call it Victorian taxidermy shadow box. I think that's kind of a stretch. Another. With a bubble, but a shadow box might come up with a similar item to what you're looking for, and then it could lead on to more and more things that would get you there.
Shirley Bauman, our guest, with us till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Every once in a while, there's a story in the news about somebody finding something in the attic that turned out to be worth a lot of money. How often does that happen? Probably not as often as you'd wish as you look through your own attic. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Whether your attic's got a great thing or not, you might have something here you want to at least ask about. Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer, our guest today. What do you have that you'd like to know more about? Wonder what its value might be? Well, Shirley can help you. Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can leave a question on my Facebook page. Just go to the Facebook and to The Larry Mueller Show. Post there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. Taking a look at what's hot, what's not in the world of appraisals today with Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and a registered Wisconsin auctioneer. She owns Bauman Auction Services. We've got a website, BaumanAuctions.com. We have a link to it on my Facebook page. So if you're on my page, just go there and click on that and get right to her. She's comes by every so often. We always have a lot of fun hearing from you at the different things that you have in your possession. And certainly today is no exception. Lots of callers online. In fact, every line's full. So let's go to Taylor in Rushford, Minnesota, who's been waiting a long time. Taylor, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hey, it's worth the wait. We have a old military trunk that belonged to my great-grandfather. He was in World War One, and inside of it, we never knew what was inside because it was under a whole bunch of stuff, and we were just too lazy to move everything else, I guess. But inside, we found a gas mask and what seemed to be a pair of military-issued bibs to him that were maybe worn during the colder months, and they show quite a bit of wear and such. But we were wondering, you know, if they have more sentimental value to us than they would dollar value anyway. But we were wondering what they would be worth and if there's a lot of World War One memorabilia such as that out there yet.
Well, there actually is a lot of World War One memorabilia because, just like you, families remember their ancestor that you know, fought in the war, and they appreciate that service, and they keep some of those things from that period. The trunk and the items you mentioned, and as you mentioned on the bibs, condition is important. Trunks we see a lot more of than gas masks because the trunk has a useful purpose. People can, you know, use it for storage and such as well. I've seen gas masks go around the 200 to maybe 250 range, and it depends upon if it's complete and all of that as well, condition. And the other items would have a lesser value than that. Sometimes the trunks, if they're just the plain green with a number or something, are even less than $100. And the bibs, like you said, pretty worn, not a lot of value, lower dollar value.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Taylor. Appreciate the call. And we've got David in Kenosha. Oops, sorry. David, we'll get to you in a minute. First, let's go to Mike in Eau Claire. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My father, I inherited from my father, I guess it's a carpenter's chest. It's all wood. And we actually just had it in our living room for many, many years. Very nice, probably 2 feet high by 4 feet, and when you open the, very heavy, and then you open it up, and inscribed in wood, or kind of carved into the wood, says Liverpool, 1865.
Okay. Do you know if that's where he was from?
It's not something that was in our family.
Okay. Well, part of it has to do with how it's constructed. If there's dovetail
joints on the
corners.
Nice drawers inside of it, yeah.
You're right, that slide.
Yes.
Correct, back and forth. And does it have hardware on the outside?
Yes.
Long?
Mm-hmm. And I've got a key for it that's a huge key.
Okay, sure. Sounds like a very nice one, and we do see those. People keep them in the family. As a matter of fact, I appraised one some years back for the State Historical Society. It was going to be a donation from a carpenter from Wanawak, and it was filled with all the old tools.
Oh, boy.
So that was a very interesting job. And a carpenter's chest like that, today's market, maybe $300 to $400 in that range. It's probably pine, is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
It's dark wood, but it's darker than pine.
It could be a walnut or some other wood. But
mm-hmm.
And if it's from Liverpool, it might be an English wood that's more common there than we see here. But that's kind of where I'd put it in that maybe $300, $400 range. And it's a very nice piece to keep a hold of.
Yeah. Now, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. David in Kenosha, now we go to you. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Shirley.
Hi.
I had a question. I have an eye for oil paintings, and I have one that stands out. It's Claude Monet, and I read he died in 1926. I have not got it appraised. I just wondered, I think it's called Fields in Spring, and I can tell it's original because the canvas is aged. I got it at a secondhand shop, so I just wondered what your opinion on it is.
Well, I would just ask you to think about this again. You can tell it's old, but do you actually know Monet's signature? If it looks like Monet's signature.
I have his books. I can relook again and make sure.
Because it's the famous artists that people will try and copy.
Okay.
So it's real important. And that's why we talk about authenticating things. Because I could sign my name, Monet, on some painting and try to pretend to sell it as a Monet. I'm not a good artist, so I wouldn't even try, but some people might. And again, the more famous the person is, the more likely that happens. And sometimes people try to replicate their work as a challenge, not necessarily to try and fool people, but to challenge themselves as an art student, say, if they could do that kind of work. So,
I've heard of a man that made a living doing that.
Yeah. So you need a specialist in Monet. And if it is a Monet, an original Monet, has something very, very special.
What would you guess at the price range if it's original?
Oh my goodness.
Because he did so much art, I didn't know if it was valuable.
It's very valuable. He's a very well-known artist. And
we're talking tens of thousands here.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Because
it's
about 24 wide by about 20 inches tall.
Sounds like a large size.
Oh, man.
Very large.
The price keeps going up here.
Yeah. I mean, you could be in the hundreds of thousands if it's been in your possession for a while and it's a lost Monet painting that nobody really knew about. I think that would be very well worth you having someone take a look at it.
Well, how would I go about that? I really don't know.
Where are you located?
Kenosha.
Well, Milwaukee, if you can get up there to the museum, or maybe even there's an art museum in Kenosha, I'm not sure. But the Milwaukee Art Museum might be willing to take a look at it and say, no, that's really not a true Monet, or they're going, yeah, that is. Let's, then you can, from there, they would... the museums usually have a list of appraisers that they can refer you to at that point.
Okay, I have gone that route. I have just not emailed or sent pictures in to go to a further investigation.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I should pursue that. But I heard you on the radio today. I thought, well, I'm going to give a call.
Yeah, I would send it in, send a good picture of the work in general, the signature, a close-up of the signature.
Okay.
And even the back of it helps.
Okay.
They might be able to give you a little bit of information on where to go. And
okay, well, thank you.
Who
so
can
much,
take a closer right? look? I know there are art appraisers in Milwaukee that
that would do it.
Do it, yeah. Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you very much. I hope that's what you have. You're going to be very happy
mm-hmm.
with
yes.
the result if that indeed is the case. Well, here we have listener Dave in Madison shared a great photo, an amazing story. He has an 1825 carved whale's tooth, which his great-great-great-grandfather got as a crew member on a ship. It has the story of the voyage carved in words and pictures around the tooth. Wow! And it's that far back, so if it really... And it looks to me, as we look at the picture here, you can see the date that's burned right into the tooth. So
yes.
he's got something there that looks really, really valuable.
If you can take a look at the Facebook page, go ahead and do that because you'll want to see this piece.
Oh, man, for sure.
Yeah, and what that is called is scrimshaw.
Scrimshaw.
Scrimshaw. And sailors did that often as they were at sea and kind of needed something to keep them occupied between the work they were doing while they were, you know, off duty or, you know, passing time there on the high seas. And some of them did a better job than others at carving, but they are definitely sought after. As far as value, again, I'd have to take a close look at it. They can be in the thousands of dollars
oh, yeah,
in value.
I wouldn't doubt that.
With the provenance you have of whose it was and what period, that will bump it up into the higher range. And it's got a lot of words on, but from here it doesn't look like a lot of pictorial elements.
Oh,
more
it
words
looks like,
than
yeah,
pictures.
It's kind of hard to tell. It looks like there might be a picture of the ship or a
yeah.
drawing of the ship.
There's
there.
A little bit of a glare on the picture, so we can't really be sure, but it looks like on the top there's the masts maybe and things. So pictures are sought after too, but the whole the story of their voyage is great. That's something, again, that I would look at sending to one of the major auction houses, try and get a photo without the glare on it, if you can. In Madison, you know, I've looked at things like that. I can research it for somebody. I also have a colleague in my organization who's a maritime specialist who might have some information. So, you know, if I can be of help, that'd be fine. But it's definitely a piece worth looking into.
So, okay, let's go to Ellen in Brookfield next. Ellen, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I don't actually have an item I want to ask about, but the man who called in about the World War One items, I know that there's just a ton of World War One items out there, but in Kansas City is the only World War One National Monument. I think it's been called the Liberty Memorial.
Yep.
If people want to have something appraised, they probably could help with that. But the other thing is, if it's something really special, they could possibly donate it. They're gorgeous monuments. If anybody's ever there, it's just gorgeous.
It really is. It's beautifully done. It's beautifully
awesome.
Done. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, that's something that I'm sure that they would be interested in looking at. Thank you again. Linda in Egg Harbor, let's turn to you next. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have in my possession an original African-American Barbie doll made by Mattel. It's still in the original box attached to the backing, never been opened. The box has some wear, but it's really unique in that the language on the box, the marketing language says, you know, she's black, she's beautiful, she's dynamite. You know, she has an afro. Her facial features are a little bit different than the African-American Barbie dolls that are on the market today. So I was just wondering if that might have any value.
Well, Barbie collectors are always looking for something a little bit different and something they don't have. And yes, I would say it does have value. A Barbie in its original box, even the newer collectible ones will have some value. That one, I think, will have value because it's one of the early African-American ones. and the language you mentioned. Exactly what that is, I'd have to do a little bit of research. But, you know, Barbies have just such a history and such a following that you do have something that's worth looking a little bit further into it. And I would start looking for sales that might have happened on eBay, because it sounds like something that's not like an antiquity. You probably will be able to see that. So try and look for completed sales on eBay of African-American Barbies. And I would bet you might find something pretty close.
All right. There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Linda. And Luba in Madison, your turn. Hi, Luba.
Hi. I have eight Oriental figurines. They're either Japanese or Chinese. They represent various professions or religious whatevers, and there's no number on the base other than auctioneer numbers. Now, is there any value? It's hard to say, but I've tried to find out what those eight professions or religious studies or whatever mean, but I've never been able to find it. And is there somewhere where I could further look?
Well, I have some books at home of Asian arts and artifacts and that kind of thing, and that's where I would start. One of the books that I dearly love and use often is by Lark Mason, and he's the gentleman on the Antiques Roadshow who does a lot of the Asian arts, and he's got a very, very good book on that kind of thing. It might be, I'm trying to think, they call them the Graces or the, actually they're kind of the gods of their religious order, and I can't even remember what they call them right offhand. Of course, as soon as we're off the air, it'll come to me, but it might be, you know, it's probably a very significant number and it means something specific in the culture. And again, like I said before, that's not really my specialty. I know enough to, you know, call somebody in when I'm having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm you didn't say what they're made of. Are they carved of something? Are they ceramic? Are they?
They're ceramic.
Okay.
Yes. And
yeah.
At the base, they have. I would think that it would be Japanese because they have waves around the base from which figures emerge.
Yeah, I really can't give you much information about them, but
okay.
I would keep looking on the internet and books about Asian arts.
Yeah. Yep,
Asian ceramics.
Asian ceramics, yeah. Yes.
And the fact that they have no numbers is that, I know that numbers are important.
Well, they can be, or sometimes in the Asian arts, it's a little different than here in the United States. They might just have some sort of symbol that we don't even recognize as being their maker's mark or something.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Nancy sent us some photos of a powder horn from the French and Indian War, signed by Thoe Trickett, dated 1759, depicting a fanciful map of the Hudson River Valley. Trickett is not a relative, so I don't know who he is or how my family acquired the horn. And she was really interested. She got three very nice photos of the horn.
Yes.
There's a little crack near the plug. It's the only damage she can see. But, man, that could be worth some.
Yes,
something.
It could. You know, a plain powder horn that you might see without any of the dating or carving or anything might be a couple hundred dollars worth, two, three in that range. Now, when you start adding all this information to it, you know the war it was in, you know the person who had it, and you've got the decoration they did on it, I would think that would go, you know, up into maybe triple that amount.
Yeah.
What you can do is look up the military records. The United States government has military records. So you might be able to find out, and I think it's military records.org. I'm not positive about that, mm-hmm. but I think you could Google military records on the internet and find out how to go to that. And it's a free site from the federal government.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, very nice item. And that crack doesn't matter too much because almost all of them from that period are going to dry out and crack. It doesn't look like it was mistreated. It's just a crack from its age.
That really looks nice.
Very nice one.
That's on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You should take a look at it if you'd like to see it. And here's something from Julie. I'm not sure the size of these. They look like they might be tie clasp size or cufflink size almost, but I'm not positive. On the back of one is written in script the Derby. And I can't read what the other one says. The rounded one end has a horseshoe on it. The other end is a clamp. So you got a horseshoe on one end, a clamp on the other. It some sort of pin, I guess.
Yeah, something looked like it was clipped to something, you know. And the Derby with the horseshoe could be the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. A memorabilia. Horse racing does have a lot of cachet. And there were, you know, items made for that, memorabilia for, you know, dignitaries and for different people. I don't know exactly what you have here. It could have even been clipped to, you know, something. We've seen napkin clips from a special dinner or that kind of thing. So it's hard to say exactly, especially from the pictures, what they are. And again, the size, we don't know. But if there may be 4-5 inches. It could have just been like a clip put at a, you know, as a placeholder at a table, a dinner table or something. I'd have to know more about it. Again, special horse races have a collector value, and I'd look at, you know, horse racing memorabilia and then work it down to Kentucky Derby, if that's it. I don't know. There mm-hmm. might be other races they called the Derby, but mm-hmm. I'm not real familiar with all those horse racing terms. But that's where I'd go. And you also want to magnify that area that says something.
Yeah.
Because you might really be able to find it and look all over it once you get a magnifier, because you might find out if it's sterling silver or silver plated or gold wash or something like that, or you could find a maker's name, which would give you a lot more information about it.
Yeah, they're pretty cool looking.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Shirley, you have a lot going on with your services, and I know we've had so many people here that we haven't had a chance to get to, but you have BaumanAuctions.com, mm-hmm. and that's the place to go for people to find out, get a hold of you and to find out more.
Or HeirloomAppraisal.com. And I do have Heirloom Appraisal Facebook page. So if we haven't gotten your question, maybe there'll be some information we can put up on the Facebook page there, too.
So Heirloom Appraisal Facebook page. I think we actually have that up on our Facebook page, I'm sure. And you can there's a direct link to it. And Shirley, once again, busy day. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Shirley Bauman, we'll have her back and we will do this again. Thank you for listening. Jason Fishbach joins us tomorrow for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network.